Yes, love is begging door to door, but finds the silence like no one lives there anymore. Rebellious love.
Hey, it's a side quest back from PAX East. I'm Dolly. I have the packed pox. That's why I look absolutely freaking horrible right now. Pardon moi. I don't even know. Pardon me for not feeling so good. And probably my eyes are going to be watering. I'll be hacking and wheezing, but I'll mute myself. We're back from PAX East. The full PAX East squad is on this podcast.
Squad.
That's Tom Johnson. Say hi, Tom Johnson.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Sam Dixon.
Hello, friends.
And Ryan Franklin.
Hi, Tom Johnson.
Hi, Tom Johnson.
Are you wearing a robe, by the way?
Yeah, I'm wearing a robe. Like, dude, I told you in the hotel, pale. I'm a man of leisure and luxury. I put this robe as soon as I got back.
Yeah, he hasn't taken that robe off is really what's happened. It's been 6 days and that robe is done. Anyways, thank you, gentlemen, for joining us on this lovely evening. It is Thursday. It's actually 1 week since we touched down in PAX. Could you believe it? It's been that long. We have a lot of great stories of all the fun PAX stuff. But again, I want to start off by saying, I caught that PAX pox, man. Whoo! I caught that PAX pox hard.
I've been there.
Yeah, yeah. You got it at PAX a couple years back.
That was a nightmare.
Yeah, this is
a literal nightmare. I thought the CIA had me trapped in a time loop.
That's hilarious, because it's true. You actually did think that.
Yeah.
So as usual, we all fit into one hotel room somehow with one king size bed. See, I'm the one who misread the hotel reservation. It said single suite, so I thought, okay, it's a suite, and it says double bedded. And so I thought, oh, cool, double bed, that means two beds. No, it means a king-size bed in a single bed suite. So whatever, we were sleeping on the floor a couple of the nights, but that's all good. We survived that part. That's not what got me sick. It's just the lack of sleep and all the yelling that screwed up my vocal cords, because I had lost my voice completely on Sunday and Monday. In fact, it was pretty funny. As I was going to a couple of my appointments on Sunday, I literally had to write down my questions because I couldn't speak. So I had to go back into my audio notes, my recordings, and try to figure out what I said during those meetings, because I couldn't hear anything. So I didn't say anything. We're back from PAX. Overall impressions of PAX, what did you guys think?
It was loud.
Yeah. It was loud, yes. That is true. You actually showed up at like 1 o'clock in the morning that Thursday night.
Yeah, I'd been driving all night through beautiful upstate New York.
Uh-huh.
In shitty asshole Massachusetts.
That's never a bad thing.
Oh, that's right. You started up stupid late that first night.
Yep.
I forgot about that.
That was when I was going to tell you to go wait for him down in the lobby.
That's the night Tom decided that he was going to wait and hang out at the bar just a little bit longer and shamble his way past to the hotel.
Well, I was going to go get hamburgers, but I fell on the pavement and just laid there for a good like 3 or 4 minutes before I was ready to get back up. And then I got, like, people were like, yo, do you need help getting up? I just put my hand up. I was like, no, just move along.
Move along.
Move along.
I got this.
Somehow you got this.
Yeah, it was a good show. There's a lot of cool stuff there. It's always cool to see all the small indie games. You know, they have the giant booths of your 2K and your Battleborn and your Twitch. People are yelling and screaming at each other. And
giving each other deodorant. Thank you, Twitch.
Yeah. Which, yeah, you know what? God bless them. They really needed that for handing out the deodorant.
Who was it that had the cat? Dan Dimitri, one of our writers who was there just kind of as a fan, was telling me that when he showed up Saturday morning when the cab guy or the Lyft guy was dropping him off at the convention center, he said, he goes, hey, Yeah, keep your nose plugged, because it's pretty bad in there. So you must have dropped off a few convention goers that weekend. It's pretty funny.
I know it's a stereotype, but, like, man, you walk past a couple people, and it's just like, what are you doing? Have you gotten to this point in your life, you know, past sixth grade, where you haven't figured out that you need to shower?
You would not believe how many dudes, every time I went to the bathroom, there would be, like, two or three guys to walk out without washing their hands. I'm thinking, holy shit, man, I gotta touch the same controllers these dudes use.
Those people are putting...
What's that? Go ahead, Tom. Okay.
Yeah. I was in a bathroom.
So I was thinking that there might be an opportunity.
There's this guy I know.
There's this guy I know.
Five times.
Go ahead, Tom. Right. I'm just kidding.
But no, I watched a guy in the bathroom go to the bathroom, go walk over to the sink, look over his shoulders, run the water, but not wash his hands, and then put his hands under the hand dryer.
That's the part I don't get. If you're going to, like, fabricate the lie that I washed my hand.
Might as well just do it.
Yeah, the least you could do is at least, like, just slice your hand under some water for a second. Just and like, oh, it's damp.
Just fruit ninja that thing. Just fruit ninja that thing, at least. I went in there one time. This was, like, the first day of PAX, so that Friday. I went to the bathroom to wash my hands, actually, before I went to get some lunch. And I hear a guy walks into the stall behind me. And I hear him go, all right, man, you could do this. All right, you got this, man. You could do this. I'm thinking, what is he going to do? What kind of moral support does he need to go into the bathroom? Anyways, those are great poop stories from PAX.
So. Yeah.
Another great – go ahead.
I was going to say, this year it seemed like on the show floor – I mean, esports are always really big.
Yeah.
But this year they had the Overwatch, like, arena that they were shoutcasting matches – facing directly towards, like, the League of Legends shoutcast arena, and they both just had their own, like, Jitta cams that at one point were, like, both, like, kind of, like, near each other, and they kind of looked like they were just going to, like, hold hands and be like, we're together in esports.
We are joining our worlds together. And Halo was there as well, and so was Hearthstone. Like, the whole section of esports was unbelievable this year. It was really, really kind of cool, because you could tell that, I mean, we're going to see more and more of that as these conventions roll on as esports kind of takes over. We need an esports Olympics is what we need. I
wonder if we're going to see less of it, because if stuff like Battleborn, they try to push the esports thing, and how many times is it, like, with what Call of Duty Black Ops 2 and Halo 3 back in the day, they try to push the esports thing, and, you know, some of those have had some success, but others, like what's that one MOBA, the DC Universe MOBA. They design and make a game like they're going to get a huge audience, and then just nothing happens.
The thing is still going. I had a chance to try that out for the Xbox One, and it plays exactly like the game played before. So there you go. You get DC Universe Online on your Xbox One. I think the layout of the floor this year was way better than last year's PAX East. PAX East was – this year everything was kind of mixed up, so – you would walk past, like, video game, and then, like, tabletop game, and then, a reseller, you know, and then there would be, like, some accessory company, and then another video game. I do like that it's all kind of mixed up like that. Last year, they had it divided, so here were the video games over, the indies, and the games over here, tabletop stuff here, like, lunch area here, and there was hardly any esports last year. And that kept me out of the tabletop area because I was so focused on the gaming stuff. So I did like that there was a little bit more of a mishmash there. And it felt packed. Like, there was still more room. There were probably less attendees than the last few years, but still felt pretty packed. So I did like that.
Actually, I was reading something. I forget where the source was from, but, like, the numbers came out, I think. And now, like, PAX East has surpassed Prime in attendance.
Sure.
Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy.
I like it. I think PAX East is my favorite gaming event that I attend every year. Even though you didn't have as much of a presence from a few companies there, but it's going to be bigger than E3, so there's that at least.
It'd be real cool if they brought back that cocktail hour though at the end of it. So media
they had it.
There was a cocktail hour.
There was an indie mega booth cocktail hour.
Oh, yeah, I remember
I saw photographs of that, on Monday or something, on Twitter, and a bunch of tweets about it, and I thought, oh, we should have hung around there.
So we could have spilled beer all over people's booths.
Yeah, exactly, right? Whoops. Yeah, there was a lot of cool things at PAX this year. We're gonna dive into kind of our team choice awards here in a second. I do have to mention just another great shout out to that homeless wheelchair dog that we saw.
Oh man, the dog!
Oh, yeah, MVP of PAX for sure.
MVP of PAX. So we're walking home on Friday? I think it was.
It was Friday, yeah.
We're walking back to the hotel on Friday, and we see these kind of two girls carrying these boxes or these packages. They kind of cross paths with them, and about 100 yards behind them, there's this dog with messed up legs that's in this doggy wheelchair, and he's just like trotting along all by himself. And I'm thinking, is that dog with them? No, that dog paid for that wheelchair with his own homeless money. That dog hustled to get that wheelchair because he was out there on his own. Didn't have a leash or anything. No tags, no nothing.
It looked right at us. Like, it looked me right in the eye, and it looked real sad.
It kept going. It looked right at us and kept going as if it's like, yeah, you guys aren't going to help me, so why should I bother stopping and asking for doggy treats? This was like the most humanized animal I've ever seen in my entire life.
Poor and then there was the street whiskey we found.
Oh, yeah, street whiskey is always good. The Fireball.
I do want to say that dog probably had better social skills than about a third of the attendees.
Yeah, exactly. That's fair. You know what the sad part is? And I'm going to say this, and I'll probably get bashed on Twitter about it, but there is a gaming stereotype, and man, PAX East brings out all those stereotypes. I mean, I hate to say it, but like, God, there's so many gaming stereotypes, and a lot of them are true at PAX East.
The longer you sit in the line, like, the more that you'll see. Like, it always starts out as, like, it's like, oh, you know, PAX is this lovely place for all, like, gamers to come and enjoy themselves. But, like, it must just be something about sitting there and, like, not being able to do anything for, like, a couple minutes that just drives people crazy. And they have to share their, like, super inappropriate and very wrong opinions. Like, to you. And that's the thing. It's like, I always, like, whenever I'm not, like, seeing something for media, I always, like, try to put my media badge away.
Right, right.
Because, like, you know, like, I just want to talk to developers, like, somebody who's, like, interested in trying out their game and not as somebody that can, like, help, like, progress their game on the internet. Right. But that just means that the people that are, like, standing next to you in line assume that you're just some other, like, random, like, gamer dude. So, like, you know, you always get the dudes that are, like, trying to point out the cosplayers and, like, how hot they are or whatever, how hot they're not and how they should or shouldn't be that character or whatever. And then you have, like, the people that just assumes that, like, everybody's a gamer gator like them.
Yeah.
So they, like, need to share their opinion. And then, I mean, don't get me wrong, you do encounter, like, the very nice, like, very, like, willing to help.
There were tons of those people. Absolutely. In fact, it felt like the majority of the people that I ran into were super nice, awesome folks. But there is that 25% that, holy shit, they're everything that you hear about.
Yeah. Like that dude who I was sitting next to on my train up.
Well, oh yeah, like the guy you were talking about. Yeah, we won't get into that, but yeah, holy cow.
Oh,
I didn't hear anything about this guy.
Oh, 1 second, but like back to what Sam was saying before I move on, we were sitting in the Westin while Dai was talking to someone. He's like, oh, hey, I know everyone. But this guy was like trying to hit on this girl hardcore. And then
you might want to check out my Twitch channel.
That's not a pickup line. Check out my Twitch channel.
No, that's like maybe even worse than when people were trying to use their YouTube viewer accounts like to get into parties and stuff like that. It's like, you may know me from my illustrious Twitch channel.
And then back to like what Sam was saying also, I was sitting at the Westin bar waiting for a drink, and there was this big, let's call him, he was a portly gentleman. And he was dressed as Kylo Ren.
Oh, wow, cool, good.
And he was sitting at the bar, and he was discussing with the guy next to him, like, the most disgusting pickup maneuvers and how he was going to try and avoid them all night.
Is he going to use the Force?
Ah, that would be better. But he was like, yeah, man, let's hope this gets me some tonight.
There you go.
Yeah.
Tinder was off the chains, I guess.
I bet.
Good Lord. Yeah, PAX East. But it's a phenomenal show again. It was I think it was the best year this year in terms of content.
Experience with a lot of great people.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah.
I think we make sure we say that before we let our negativity get the best.
Right.
Sure. Well, and this year, like, all the booths...
Fuck video games.
Yeah.
Fucking nerds.
All the booths seemed, like, further separated apart. Yes. Like, it was easier to move through hallways. It seemed like the, like, bigger developers learned that, like, trying to do a bag giveaway in the middle of the tiniest hallway where everybody needs to move through is a bad idea this year.
Oh, yeah.
And even so much so, I think that, like, you know, there's been problems with enforcers in the past. And them, like, not being as useful as PAX wants them to be. And at least my experience was, anytime I needed help with any of the PAX organizers or anything like that, they were able to help me immediately.
Oh, totally. They were friendly. The staff was so friendly this year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
At this point, the only, like, negative thing I can say about the running of PAX is that there's still a diversity lounge, and we just haven't all accepted that diversity should be a part of everything.
Well, you know, you gotta avoid that place because that's for all the people who are trying to take our games away, Sam.
You're right. Don't censor us, but censor them by putting them in a room. So
yeah, there you go. But yeah, great show. Great points. The there was more room. There was a lot more content this year. I've always been able to see every game or just about every game at PAX when I go. This year, I did not see every game. Even during the media hour, I mean, I ran around during that 1 hour we had and saw a bunch of stuff, but yeah, there was so much stuff this year. It was unbelievable. And then VR was everywhere. Like, finally VR was, you know, like almost every booth had some VR set up. So that was cool. But yeah, PAX East, lots of fun. We met some awesome people, got to reconnect with a lot of great friends, and that's one of the best things about PAX East is that. So, I think with that said, let's move on to maybe our Team Choice Awards. Some of the great games that we played. And I have the list up right here. And I'm going to start with Night in the Woods. That won a team. So first of all, the Team Choice Award, for those who don't know, every year at PAX, a.k.a. this is the second year, we select 8 games that we think are the best in show for, not necessarily the best in show, but the ones that resonated most with us. There are so many great games. Because we don't get a chance to all see all of them, they're just, it's overwhelming. So these are the ones that just resonated with us. And we loved them, or really enjoyed them, I should say. And we recommended everybody else check them out. Night in the Woods, I think a bunch of us actually ended up seeing this. But you want to explain, Tom, a little bit about what Night in the Woods is?
All right, so it's like a 2D side-scrolling adventure game. It has a bit more like interactivity than most like point-and-click adventure games. You have agency. Yeah, boo, hands and the thing. You have like more agency, and like you're moving around. You're talking to people in the world. You're selecting dialogue trees. There are a bunch of mini games in it that are really weird. Sorry, fuck you, Ryan. So, like, a couple of the main games were, like, I had to steal from a Hot Topic, basically. Or, like, smash fluorescent light bulbs with a baseball bat. Or, from what I played, it's a real delinquency simulator so far. Yeah. And you're, like, and some early 20s girl who is also a cat, who, like, drops out of college and goes back to her hometown and has to, like, try and reconnect with all, like, these people and, like, the... realizing and coming to terms with the fact that everything like continued to move on while she was gone. So there's like an underlying sadness that I'm kind of about that you don't get.
No, I get it. It was really, I mean, I think the aesthetic really played up on that, right?
Oh yeah. It's gorgeous. Like if you haven't seen it, it's this beautiful flat 2D cartoonish style that all the animations are like wonderfully done. It's not like, because 2D, you can really half-ass things a lot, and they did not here. Dolly, you saw a bit of it, right? You saw a little bit of it?
Yeah, I did. Sorry, I was muted for a second there. Okay. I thought it was really cool. There's like one scene where they're in a that I was kind of playing. They're in a I don't know if they're going through a schoolyard or what they were going through, but they're like busting open some like lockers and stuff, and all kinds of crazy shit is happening. But yeah, the ambiance of the game, kind of the whole environment, the whole experience is, I don't want to say ethereal, because that's maybe not the word to use, but it's got this darkness to it, and it's really kind of engaging because of that. You know, it draws you in for the fact that you don't ever really know what's going on, but every time you click on something or go somewhere, something really kind of, you know, crazy, or not crazy, but something with like a little hint of evil seems to take place. So I thought it was a pretty cool, pretty cool game. Definitely something that felt fresh, I guess.
Yeah, it was probably my game of show. I love that game so much. Like, I was really excited going into it to find it, and then I was waiting for it to let me down, and it didn't. And I can't wait to play the whole thing, because that demo could go on for an hour. At that station, they had to start kicking people off stations to be like, "Yo, we got a line. People need to start moving."
Yeah, it was. I think it's going to be one of those games that's definitely worth checking out. What is the release date on that one? It's this year,
right? I think it's summer.
Okay,
I want to say it's going to be, I believe, PS4 and PC.
Cool. Yeah. Next on the list, as I get it here, is Headlander. Headlander. So that's Tom and Sam both saw this.
Yep, Sam's the one that played it, though.
Okay, go ahead, Sam. Tell us about Headlander.
Just to start off Headlander, the best way to explain it is it's Adult Swim and Double Fine working together, which should at least begin to put some ideas in your head. But basically, the gist of the game is, you are the last living human, and by living human, they mean the last living head of a human out there in space, at least that you're aware of. As soon as you get reawoken out of cryo sleep, you get affixed to a robot body, and obviously you have questions, and no one is around to answer them, and you cannot ask them because you no longer have vocal cords to express any sort of anything, I guess. But the whole point of the game is sort of like a puzzle, like almost like Metroid style, like moving through environments. And you have the ability to lift yourself off of your base and attach yourself to other bodies and to other things that have ports for heads. The demo was pretty short at PAX, but man, did they manage to pack in quite a few jokes, a lot pertaining to sucking things off. It's one of the first abilities you get is to use the head to suck other heads off of bodies and asphyx yourself to them. And they make sure to not say, oh, yeah, just knock that head off. And they make sure to mention, no, you can just suck that head off a little bit. Or later when you get to the
escape pod. The innuendo is totally there.
You get to the escape pod at the end of the demo, and the escape pod definitely looks like a cock and balls. And you need to deactivate its defenses or whatever to attach yourself to it. And it's like, oh yeah, just go to the tip there and suck it off for a second. You'll get to the panel. Yep. And you're like, yeah. okay, Double Fine. I get you. I get where you're going. But other than the humor, gameplay's pretty solid. A lot of it has to do with Double Fine's previous game, Stacking, where you're putting yourself on these bodies that have particular abilities that might give you access to another area, or even just a way to shoot at enemies that are trying to knock your head out of the sky. And just smart, funny, different things you can do. The guy who was giving us the demo made sure to point out that you could attach yourself to these robot cleaning guys. And if you talk to them with any normal body, the robots are just like, oh boy, I can't wait to go work. Can't wait to clean things up for you. It's going to be great. But then if you talk to them while you're on top of one of these robot cleaner guys, they're all talking about man, we're all going to lose our jobs. And this is ridiculous. And you find one robot cleaner that is slowly destroying the giant vacuum that they recently installed on the ship. And he's like, Viva la Revolution. We will not have our jobs taken away by the man. And you're like, okay, I'm going to let you guys do this. I got to escape. I'll be over here.
And it sounds so bonkers.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I didn't have audio, and I was just saying they're next to Sam. And then the spaceship that clearly looks like a dick goes off, and I'm like, yo, they touch on the fact that looks like a dick, and he's like, oh yeah, they did nothing but make jokes about it.
It's like that Austin Powers scene where was the second one where the dick flies by.
That looks like a giant flying Johnson. Get on the radar. Tell me what that is.
Well, that looks like a huge
melons. I guess it was one of the two other movies, because the first time it was Johnson, and the second time I think it was Breasts, right?
Right, it was Breasts, the second one,
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. Headlander, that's coming out this year also?
I don't remember on that one. I know they're targeting for PS4 and PC at launch,
okay.
But I'm not. I don't remember if they're 2016 or not, but I believe it is.
Well, here's a game that may be coming out this year, considering it's been in the it's been at PAX East for like the last 10,000 years. It's Necropolis.
Yo,
tell us about it, Tom.
Yo, that game is so good. Sam and I played it, what was it, last year we saw that, you and I?
Yeah, that was one of the ones that I just kind of was like walking the halls, and I'm like, oh, this looks fun. And just like the animation of that one heavy, that like rotating heavy attack, I think they made a GIF of it and put it online. Like just the animations of that made me want to stop, and man, what a great, like almost accessible Dark Souls, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah, but with four player co-op, and I didn't know this. Yeah. That was on the, if you played the outside demos, not the ones I was given, four player co-op was there.
Yeah, they had four player co-op was on the one side, and the single player demos were on the other side, I think.
Yeah, I wish I knew that.
Well, and I didn't really get much time with it this year, but I know that they have a lot of stuff where like the world that you play in is like keeping track and like gauging all other players' reactions to certain things and maybe choices at pivotal moments and stuff like that. And like the narrator makes sure to tell you like, oh, hey, like that was a good choice, but like a lot of people went that way. Not saying no pressure, but you can go this way, but like everybody went that way, just so you know.
Yeah, and like everything is procedurally generated now. So you get into the first level, and then you go left or right, and then everything is just, like, different every time. They made, like, a series of blocks and all that stuff with random loot and everything. They added a crafting system. So it's just, like, exactly what we played last year, but just, like, a lot more of it. And they added classes, but they only had one playable. So I want to see what those other ones are. They didn't specify as to what they were yet, but there are some videos out there that showed different dudes. Although I'm not entirely sure what they do yet. It's still real good. Like a year later, it is an actual game now, as opposed to like a 5-minute hallway that you can check out, which I think is why we didn't give it one last year, because it was just
probably
like a proof of concept. Yeah, but it's like a real game now, and it comes out in like a couple months on PC, PS4, and Xbox.
Well, cool. And that game is so, like, visually, I don't want to say visually striking, because that feels a little cliche, but, like, it's so defined by, like, even just looking at its, like, the text that they use for the actual title of Necropolis, like, pretty much gives you a good idea of, like, what the environment looks like and what the characters look like. And I that game just has such a strong, like, sense of visual identity from every part of it. Like even the items like end up looking exactly like you would think, you know, like, oh, this is a health potion, but it's a health potion that like looks so different from other health potions and so defined in that world that it's super cool.
Oh yeah, and like they do low poly, but they make it so it doesn't look shitty. Like it still looks really, it's low poly, but it still looks really polished.
Yeah, it's sense. I imagine like that's what tech demos on like the PS2 looked like before they actually like put gameplay into it. It was like, no, here's like the base things, and like I swear we're gonna make that tree look like a tree, but like that's what we got right now.
Yeah, I think that's it. Sam, do you have anything else to say?
No, other than I'm super excited to play that when it like fully comes out. Like I didn't even want to play like that much of it at PAX because I didn't want to like get too excited to have to wait for a couple of months.
Oh. Yeah, so what's next, Dolly?
How about Ruiner? Ruiner is next. And Sam, or Ryan, you got to see Ruiner, didn't you?
Excuse me, yeah. Yeah, I saw Ruiner, and it was definitely, I said it was my game of the show.
Yeah.
I don't like to rely solely on comparisons as shorthand, but it's pretty easy in this case. This is actually how the developers, former, they worked on a bunch of stuff. Used to, team members used to work on the Witcher series, Dead Island. What's the other Dead Island one? The parkour one, Dying Light. So they're all experienced devs. And I was talking to one of them, and he said how it had actually started as a Hotline Miami clone by way of Akira and Ghost in the Shell and all those kinds of classic cyberpunk anime. And it's got that look, man. It is so slick looking. So it's a top down shooter, sort of the way Hotline Miami was. It's not pixel art. It's, you know, it's 3D and all that. But before the actual combat levels, it's divided into levels, and there are city hubs, and you're just walking around this fictional future Asian city. I think it was called Rangkok. And you know, there's all the cyberpunk stuff there. People have sunglasses that look like Cyclops visors from X-Men. They've got neon colored hair. There's neon lights everywhere. There are police that have cyborg suits. There was one thing in one of their, you know, promotional screenshots where an NPC says, you walk past people and they're all saying stuff that adds to the atmosphere. One thing I walked past was, it was basically like a virtual whorehouse, it seemed like. And it said something that was almost, it was basically like the girl was trying to hit on your character, but almost in programming language, like not quite if else stan opera, you know, stuff like that. But one guy said something, it was every revolution needs its own haircut, man. And I think that's a good way to sum up the aesthetic of that game.
Sure.
But it was a ton of fun because it doesn't play exactly like Hotline Miami, but it's sort of that same thing where you're running around trying to kill people real quick. There's melee options. I started out with a lead pipe. Then when you kill people, you get weapons that only have maybe 7 shots. And then once you use them, you just drop them on the ground. But the big difference is between Hotline Miami is they have these gadgets and abilities. One of them was a shield. You press space bar and you just pull up a laser shield. Mm-hmm. And if you do that while moving, you can charge through people and that sort of thing. So that was pretty cool. But the big one is the dash ability. So while you're using it, you know, use WASD keys and to move around and the mouse to look around and aim. And I think it was right click. If you right click on the mouse in any direction, you can dash in that direction. It's not quite a teleport because you could still get sort of caught in it, but you can dash in any direction. So you're going backwards, you're going forwards, and then you can loop your way all around the enemies and just catch them in traps and really have, if I had more time to play at the demo and try to be good enough, I could tell you there was easily that way where you can just get in there and just have that perfect flow around enemies and feel totally in control of the game. And even on the PAX floor, I said this in my preview, it just got me right into that zone when you're playing games. You're just in a trance, and all you're thinking about is trying to maximize. It wasn't a combo system, but just trying to maximize the combo you have in your mind and just trying to get it to look cool. And man, does it. I really liked it.
Sweet. Yeah, that's that game had a lot of folks talking about it at the show. I kept hearing over conversations over it. So that's one that I'm actually kind of interested in as well. I didn't get a chance to play it, but I read your piece and I kind of watched a couple other folks as I was standing by the booth play it, and it looks really cool. The visual design is awesome. I think that to me was what was selling me the most. Excellent. So I'm gonna hop in.
Was one thing I wanted to say before. Yeah. It was, I had a lot of fun with the gameplay, and I could tell that I think I'll like it overall. But there were some things that I think, if stretched out through the full length of a full game, you know, I don't know how long it's gonna be, 6 hours, 9 hours, whatever. There were a couple things that might become a nuisance. To regenerate, you have health and energy bars. Health regenerates a little bit when you kill enemies, but mostly you regenerate through, you stand on these these tiles that are found every couple of times throughout your level to regenerate your health. And that just felt like it slowed things down. And you know, they could have just had pickups drop from enemies after they die, or regenerating health after you're cleared from, you clear from one combat zone to something else. Because that just felt, like I said, it just stops the time, that flow, which seems like the best part. It's interrupting that a little bit. And same was the case where I was actually looking back on it, the combat level was a little disappointing, because walking around the city and the hub where you're doing the quest, everything's so vibrant and full of life and just design. And then this is only one level, to be fair, but it was just like, you know, a parking garage where everything, there's just, you know, ruined cars and everything's kind of gray. And there was a lot of walking between the various fight encounters, which felt to me, like I said, if you stretched that out of the course of a full game instead of just a demo at PAX, it felt like there was potentially enough time and enough of those that you could lose that adrenaline rush that you got from the combat. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. But I really liked it, and I'm still optimistic about it.
Cool. I took a look at another top-down game, Live Lock, which is, I think Perfect World is the publisher for that one. The developer is like Tuque or Tuque. I'm not 100% sure how to pronounce it, like Tuque. But essentially, it's like a futuristic, I don't want to say MOBA, but it's that whole top, it's that top down click attack RPG ish game. It's like RPG light. There's actually a lot of upgradability to characters, and it's co-op. So up to three players can take down individual levels, and you get, it's basically everything is a machine. Everybody's a machine in this. And so there's whether you're kind of like this cyborg-ish,
we're all robot, like machines, man.
We're all machines, man. And so you get to choose between three different classes. So there's Hex, which is kind of the traditional warrior, you know, intermediate class. You have Vanguard, which is kind of like your tank. And then you have the Catalyst, which is, I don't want to say healer, but healing is a big part of what she does. But that's who I played in this game in my demo time. And her ability is basically she gets to shoot out these or let out these drones that can kind of do some of the dirty work for her. While, you know, you let out some drones as your special attack, and then you can go and attack some other enemies, and those drones kind of do their thing, and then you launch more as you collect energy and loot along the way. But it's like the demo level I played was probably about 15 minutes long, and it's got some semi destructible environments. So you can like kick open doors and blow up, you know, railings and knock down some obstacles along the way. But what I really liked about it was just it felt like a futuristic MOBA that I could get behind, right? And again, it's not a MOBA, but it's got that feel where you're kind of traversing. It's not necessarily competitive. It's cooperative, and that's why I don't want to necessarily call it a MOBA, but.
Is it against NPCs or other players?
It's against, well, we played against NPCs. I'm not sure if there's going to be a competitive multiplayer. I didn't ask that question. I'll look into that. Sorry for not being prepared, everybody. But it's a co-op team game. So you're kind of going through these levels and gathering loot, and it's a little bit Diablo-ish, I guess, in the weird way. But really cool aesthetic, and I was really digging all the special attacks. So it's like dual stick shooter almost, I guess you could kind of say. And then launching drones and doing that kind of stuff was my catalyst job. And we never, as long as there's one character, one teammate alive, you're never quite out of the match or out of the level. If all three die, then you lose. So. If you die and the other partners or somebody's alive, you can basically 3D print yourself a new body, which I thought was a really cool way for respawning to make it a little bit more believable. Because in the future, you could just 3D print a new, you know, a new robot, and that's got the same AI as the old one. So I like that aspect of it, but it's played very well. It's really smooth. I did notice I kept getting caught kind of behind some of the terrain in the game. In the environments, but I think that was just something that they're still working on. It's still in like alpha or beta, so but tons of fun. And I can see myself sinking tons of hours into this game because it's going to be one of those co-op games that I keep coming back to, at least from this demo that I played. And again, be wary of demos, especially the ones that play as well on show floors as this one did, because you never know what they're going to be like when they're released. But really cool, great aesthetic, great design. It kind of reminds me of the Mass Effect-ish design with really cool mechs and robots and stuff. So,
Dolly, yeah. You brought up a big point that I want to ask about with the 3D printing. You said it's the same AI.
Yep.
AI,
yeah.
I think that raises this question. Do robots have a soul?
Do they dream of electric sheep?
When you get down to it and you're just talking about 3D printing and the same AI, all I can think about is that Star Trek Next Generation episode where they accidentally 3D print a second copy of Commander Riker. And he thinks he's the real Riker, but he's not.
Sure,
because you know why? Every time you go in the teleporter, you die, and then they 3D print you a new one.
That's right. That's how it works, isn't it?
I have another question in the same vein.
Sure.
Why are all these robots wearing pants?
That's why a great are they question. Wearing pants? Yeah. Why yeah, are robots that. Always wearing pants?
They had that statue right outside the booth, and he's got like a tabard, like a knight. Ostensibly, it seems like he wanted to cover his dong, right? But the tabard didn't cover his robo dong.
Never at all.
They have like really cool shirts on. That's a really good point. They're almost too human for. good point, everybody. You know what? Everything I said is broken now. Forget it. I'm taking back my Team Choice Award. The next game on the list is Moonshot.
Oh,
Sam,
yeah.
Sam, you saw Moonshot.
Yes. Moonshot, other than sounding like the cheap well drink that you get at the bar, is like they've been comparing it to like a lot like a real time Worms mixed with Smash Brothers, and I think real time Worms is probably the closest you can get. And basically, it's a competitive like.
By the way, I liked the title of your preview of it.
Yeah,
Bend it like NASA.
Yeah, I was looking for astronauts that may have like names close to Beckham.
Beckham.
I gave up on that real quickly and just put NASA and made my life easier. So what it is it's like it's a competitive game. They also have like I guess even 2v2 is still competitive, but you're working with somebody. Where it's one of these like arena focused competitive games, so like along the lines of like Towerfall and stuff like that. And you drive a tank in space, and you basically like fight on a map that is like a condensed solar system with the sun in the middle, and a bunch of different planets and moons rotating around it. And you can use this tank to drive over the moon and stuff that you start on, or you can use your thrusters and get to another moon or another planet. And every single planet has its own gravitational pull. It has its own orbit, which you can knock out of its orbit, I believe. And also, like, the planets themselves are destructible. So if there happens to be somebody hiding on the other side of a moon, you can just blast a hole through a moon and get there. A lot of it has to do with, like, trying to bend your shots and, like, run the physics in your mind as you're firing in hopes that you can get that one guy who's hunkered down not paying attention to you on another planet and, like, wrap a shot behind him and score a kill. And it's just like super fun. I think those types of games really do well at showing the player exactly what they need to know just by watching a match. And then after a few matches, it's just super easy to pick up and maybe even explain to other people if they want to get involved. And just really like a quick game to get people involved in, get them playing, and be able to go through a couple of matches. The great thing that those games do is make everything fun while also making everything competitive. So making you love your friends while also hating your friends at the same time. And one of the best types of games that show at a show like PAX East, because you have every type of player from different skill levels and stuff just sitting down and trying to learn the new systems of something. And Moonshot is currently in early access with Steam. So you can actually get it right now. I think it's on sale for about like $8 for a singular code, and they have like 4 code packs. And they just added online multiplayer while we were at PAX, so you can get it and a group of your friends can play from across the world or right sitting on the couch, which is probably the preferred method of how you would play that game. Any questions?
Anybody have any questions? Anything from the audience? No, but nothing from the audience. Wow. I think it's just you did such a good job explaining Moonshot.
Sure.
Does it remind you at all of, like, how do I say Angry Birds? Because there's, like, Angry Birds space where you're shooting stuff around planets and using the gravity. I mean, I like the multiplayer notion of the game, I guess. That's something that, I'm leaning towards, I guess.
It does when you're aiming.
I just don't know enough about the game, I guess.
Yeah. When you're aiming, it does bring up, like if you hold it down longer, your shot's going to, you know, shoot faster, go further. And it does show you, like, a simplified arc of where your shot will potentially go. And it even when you fire it, because these planets that you're sitting on are on in orbit and stuff like that and rotating as the match goes on, even when you fire it, it may not be 100% where your shot ends up just because time elapses and, you know, the gravitational pulls will be at different areas. So in some forms, yes, Angry Bird Space, because it does show you your shot pattern at least enough to give you a good idea of what you'll be doing. You know, shooting does do these gravitational things. When you can fly around as the tank, the movement isn't, like, the best, which would make sense because you're kind of like a giant Earth tank flying around on planets. You know, a tank's not really designed to be a spaceship. And it seems
possibly
like the thing that's really going to get people, like, maybe on their first match is trying to figure out how not to get sucked into the sun. Because every match that I played...
That's a daily struggle that planet Earth has, I think.
Yeah. Every match I played, there was always somebody that struggled for at least the first half to figure out, like, oh, okay, if I don't angle away from the sun, I will just always go straight towards the sun and die. but I think I think that they've got... we only played, like, deathmatch at PAX. I'm actually probably going to install Moonshot onto my hard drive as soon as we're done here.
Really? Okay.
And, like, give it a go. But I don't know if they're planning on any single-player content or anything like that. It just seems at this point they're in early access, and they really want to get this sort of multiplayer that they've built into people's hands.
Is there any kind of story or whatever? Is it score-based or anything?
So, like, you earn points for kills. Well, for landing blows and finally being the person that finishes people off. And it seemed a lot of times when people got hit, they were like, nope, time to bail. And they, like, jettisoned themselves into space. And it just turned into, like, a sniping match trying to take people out.
What are you laughing at?
What are you laughing at? That's awesome. That's awesome.
So
I love those glasses.
These macho sunglasses.
Yeah, brother.
I got the lamp right in my face. You know, it's bothersome.
Snap it to a Slim Jim.
Hold on. Actually, this is my Halloween costume. I got the hat right here, too.
Oh, yes. That's right. That was an awesome. I remember you posting those photos. Those are great.
This makes for great radio, guys.
Yes. Well, we have live. This is live streaming, by the way.
Yeah, watch the video, folks.
Oh, great.
So put your pants back on, everyone. Macho man, brother. Yeah.
When I had this Halloween costume, I carried around a bunch of dairy creamers, and I would tell people how the cream always rises to the top. And throw the creamer in their face. And then I found some of them about 5 months after Halloween, and they had turned to cheese.
Turned to cheese.
That was gross.
That is not yummy. Since the Macho Man was known for beating people up, tell me a little bit about Beat Cop.
Oh, nice, nice.
See that segment?
Beat Cop is a game. The developer I talked to, Pixel Crow, is the developer's name.
Yeah, it's a good name.
They said it was it was a pretty good name. Their business cards are pretty good. It's a crow made out of pixels. Never saw that coming. They said it was sort of inspired by Papers, Please, because it all takes place on one Well, let me walk that back a little. So it's Beat Cop, and you know, you literally play a beat cop, a patrol officer in New York City in the mid or early 1980s. I can't remember which they said. It was definitely the 1980s. And so you just have one street. So you can scroll a little bit left and a little bit right. You know, the camera extends. But beyond that, it's just this one street the whole game. You can go and you have to do beat cop stuff. When it starts out, you're a former detective. You've been framed. The main objective of the game, the main driving story, is trying to figure out who framed you and what happened and how to prove yourself innocent and that sort of thing. But then in the middle of all that, like, you still have regular beat cop stuff to do. So you'll have a main story objective, which might be like, you know, you got a tip, so you've got to go talk to somebody in one of the mafia people on the street who, obviously their house in a pizza restaurant. But while you're doing that, you also have to walk along the street and, write at least 10 parking tickets a day. And there's all kinds of different things you have to manage, they said. Like in Papers, Please, you know, which, if you're not familiar, was basically a border crossing clerk simulator. And you had to manage stuff like, you know, I want to let this person in because they obviously need it, but also we have to manage security and everything. But in this, you have to, you know, manage what your police sergeant wants you to do. What the community members want you to do with the different gangs, and like, you can, you know, join street gangs, you can do good stuff with the mafia. So you want to try and balance all of them to try and help you figure out the whole thing behind your framing. I just played a demo, so obviously I didn't get too deep into the story of the framing stuff. But what I did play, it was just, there was so much person, it's all pixel art based, you know, so you're just a little policeman made out of 16 blocks or something like that. But just going around and seeing all the detail, because I was fascinated. I actually talked to them about this. My great-grandfather was a beat cop, and the developers are from Poland, and it's set in New York City in the 1980s. And I asked them, I thought, this seems like such a specific thing, such a specific slice of a certain time, because they really nailed it. Like, you go into the liquor store, and like I said, even with just pixel art, people looked like they did. They said they were particularly inspired by shows like Miami Vice or Hill Street Blues, which was a little more serious than Miami Vice. You know, people had police uniforms, not the Kenny Loggins, Don Johnson type outfits. So even with just that little bit, it had a ton of personality, and it was really fascinating to see it, like I said, coming from a Polish developer. And just doing the little minutia day-to-day tasks of writing people tickets and seeing, like, oh, this is a 1974 Buick Skylark, and he's 30 minutes past his meter, so you got to write him a ticket. And I wrote a guy a ticket, and then he comes out and he tries to bribe me, and I turned him down, and, you know, maybe they'll come back to me later. And then one other thing I did was I went to all the stores to introduce myself because it's a new cop. I talked to a liquor store owner. When I went in there, somebody had just stolen something from him. And I said, you know, get out of here, kid. Don't do it again. Now, the liquor store owner got mad at me. But then this guy said, I'm gonna tell all my gang friends that you're cool. So, you know, then that could come back to help. And they told me there's a ton of different stuff you can do. You don't just have to solve your murder. You can do it in a ton of different ways. So, you know, I could try and play it totally straight cop, just do it right for the department and the community. Or, like, I could actually join the mafia and, you know, become a corrupt cop and do all this stuff. And it was just it was a real marvel to see, like I said, because it's all in one screen, but it's so densely packed with such a specific type of personality and such a specific time period. So I really, really like Beat Cop.
There were a lot of, like, cop-based games on the show floor. I played Kathy Rain, which was she's not necessarily a cop, but it was an adventure game that's you know, you're a detective, almost Police Quest ish I guess, in a weird way. And then there was the other game that I played, which was This Is the Police. It's almost like a sim cop game where you're running the department, and you have these individual scenarios pop up, and you have to do the exact same thing. You know, do you let this guy off? Do you send cops? You only have a certain amount of cops. So yeah, cops are big at PAX East this year.
Yeah, and then we had our we came up with our own. I think we lost Tom here. Did Tom drop out?
Thank goodness. I'll add him back in. That
yeah, Tom will probably want to chime in on this because we came up with our own idea for a cop game, didn't we? Do we want to share that, or do we want to mail ourselves that to get the copyright on it first?
Go ahead and share it. I think if we publish it in this podcast, then it's ours legally.
Okay, yours. Yeah, that's right. This is our copyright.
Did we agree this was a VR game, or are we just going with the classic pixelated style?
Somebody makes it. I don't care what they do. VR, pixelated. I think, you know what, VR would be best. You're right.
Yes.
We came up with the idea. One of us, I think, we misheard Dolly talking about This Is Police.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we thought it was, oh, shit, it's the police.
Oh, shit, it's the police.
Oh, we're talking about, oh, shit, it's the police?
Yeah.
Oh, shit, it's the police.
Yeah.
So then, Tom, were you the one that came up with this?
No, I think I was Sam.
Yeah,
so
Oh Shit, the Police is a drug hiding simulator where you either where the game starts and like, you know, you have a level of anxiousness and then like you hear a knock at the door and you go, oh, shit, it's the police. And sometimes it isn't even the police, which is the big part, just somebody knocking on your door.
It's the Domino's guy.
Yeah, because you were so high, you forgot you ordered pizza.
Yeah, so I've actually workshopped, oh, shit, it's the police.
Like, oh, shit, it's the police.
I think would be like a Johann Sebastian Joust type game.
Okay.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. So I'm assuming that you're already high in the game, right? And you should probably like pregame before you play the game, too, just to get real atmospheric with it.
I was thinking it was going to be like a Gone Home type deal, you know, where you're walking around and instead of discovering all these notes about your family, you're finding out, oh, shit, I'm really high.
You're running through your house, like, trying to make sure that you get everything. So you, like, you know, like, oh, you got to grab the bong that's behind your brother's TV and smash it to bits before the cops show up. And, like, you know, you got to be like, oh, man, like, where did I put that last pipe? Or, like, where did I leave that last bit of the drug? Did I put it in the coffee can, or did I take that to work? Like, I don't know. And then, like, once
is it under the floorboards?
Yeah, is it under the floorboards? You know, once the cops like actually break in after some amount of time, which will depend on how well you've locked your doors or how well you've locked the windows and stuff like that. You know, you get judged and you get jail time depending on how many drugs they find. So, like, maybe you've been a good boy and then you got rid of all the drugs, so now you're not going to jail. Or maybe they found, like, you know, just a little bit of drug. So, like, now you're now you can't play the game for 20 minutes because you're in jail for 20 minutes.
Would I be able to pay, like, $3.99 to be able to play the game again? Get out of jail?
Yeah, there you go.
Yes, but you also still have to watch advertisements. you get one free call. But like you'll remember more numbers as you sober up, but the only number you can remember is Domino's, and that one friend of yours who takes care of your cat while you're on vacation. So like those are the only numbers you get for the first couple playthroughs.
Oh, I'm all in for this game.
This is real good.
This is real good. Well, the last. What's that?
I was also continuously reminded of this idea every time Sam talked about his dad. I don't know if this is in our top eight list, but every time Sam talked about fated, fate as in destiny, I thought he was saying faded. He kept talking about, I saw the VR demo for Fated, and I thought, what? Did they just you just get high and weird in this VR demo?
Well, the last game is Sam's Racer's Dirt, which is the best named game of the show.
Oh yeah, the most incredible of games, with the best development team name too, 21.C Ducks, which is incredible. But it is an indie Korean developer actually, who is releasing this game. It's called Racer's Dirt. It will be on PS4. And I think they're exploring a PC option, but definitely a PS4 version. And I have to ask you guys, do you like old, like, top-down arcade-style racers?
Yeah.
Do you think drifting is both stupid and incredible at the same time?
Yeah.
Well, then Racer's Dirt is the most incredible game that you should play almost immediately. Man, what if you've ever played like an RC Pro-Am or any of those old like top-down racers, think of that, but there's like a dedicated handbrake button, which I'm almost certain does nothing to slow you down, but allows you to throw yourself into just insane drifts around corners, and when you drift, you get nitro to go faster, and you can use that nitro to knock people out on the roads. But it like has such a like cool visual dumb aesthetic where like every time you drift, it's like, oh my god, awesome, or like overdrift and stuff like that. It just pops up in these big letters like rewarding you for just being a good drifting dude. And there's like a couple of modes where it's like straight up racing. Then there's like drift challenge, like how much do you drift, bro? There's like also like I forget if they called them like eliminators or something like that, but like you use drifting to get nitro, and then you use nitro to slam into other cars, and you know, you got first, second, third, fourth, however many racers there are to place, and then kind of like Mario Kart, you finish a whole bunch of events, and then you get a cup at the end telling you how good you were. It has two-player split screen, so you and your friends can drift together and
run. That's what friends do for fun. We drift together.
Those who drift, drift together.
Those who drift together, stay together.
I mean, if you really go and look at Tokyo Drift, that movie's not about drifting, and it's actually about friendship.
Yes, true.
It's about family.
It's about family.
What would you do if she died?
It's about family.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm interested. I watched the I watched that game played a little bit, and I actually did have a like half a minute playing it, but it's bonkers. I love it. It's super classic in its aesthetic and its style, but the drifting aspect was what really, really kind of hooked me.
It's just so goofy, and it's such a shame. It got buried between like a couple other games. But I walked by that booth on the first day, and I watched as somebody drift, and it went like in big bold letters, it went, "Oh my god, awesome drift," or whatever. And I was like, I need the game.
Was like the house and Up, because it was like right between Battleborn and Overwatch, and you had Racer Drift in the middle.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, those were our Team Choice Awards. Those were the 8 games that struck a chord with us most. And I think all of us had, we had lots of good things to say about them. And lots of good things to say about PAX. And please keep reading up our posts, or they're going to keep going up all this week and probably a little bit into next week, because I have like 40 posts that I've drafted up.
Yeah, making final drafts real hard, Doc.
Yeah, exactly. I just like putting names and then save as draft, and then like there's no text in it whatsoever. I'll get to it eventually. The PAX Fox, man, it got me hard. We did want to touch on some news, though. What's that?
Nothing. You said the PAX Fox got you hard.
Shut your whore mouth. We do want to dive into a little bit of news, and that is Nintendo had their kind of year-end announcement and for their financials, and holy shit, was it bad.
Do you think they're going to call up Konami and go, yo, you guys still have that booth that is made to just show one game?
That's basically what they're doing. So I'll go over the news right now, and I'll have our instant reactions. So this is all broke yesterday at like 3 o'clock in the morning. But financial report, they're down like 60% in sales. In fact, somebody figured out that PSN made more money alone, Sony's PSN did, than all of Nintendo. Which is kind of.
Did you see the numbers on the Wii, like the Wii U compare and 3DS?
No. So there were like 3 million total Wii U's were sold in the year or something like that.
I have it right here. Overall, they've sold 12.8 million.
Yep. That sounds about right. A quarter of the amount of PS4s that have been sold.
And all 3DSs are 58 million as opposed to 155 that the regular DS sold.
That the early DS was. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's a changing market. Yeah, yeah. Everybody's going mobile. Yeah. In fact, they have more downloads of Miitomo than I think they had all of, than they have almost all of the Wii U. But yeah, whatever. Miitomo, 10 million downloads. That's good start for them. Hopefully they'll figure out a way to monetize it, because it's only making like 50 grand a week. It's enough to support like the coder in the back of a Nintendo. So the in this news clip, they said, hey, we're announcing the release date of the NX, which was a shock to everybody. Nobody expected them to actually utter the words NX. But the NX is coming March 2017. So it's not going to make this holiday season. We had a slight inkling that it could... First of all, I thought it was going to be this holiday. I thought it would be perfect timing for Nintendo. Or at least it would be good timing for Nintendo back months ago. And then once... and we'll get into that afterwards. And then they also said Legend of Zelda is coming to NX as along with the Wii U, which everyone kind of knew that was going to happen. But the Legend of Zelda is now delayed into March 2017. So they're pulling a GameCube Wii scenario again.
Which one can have right-handed Link in it, though?
Yeah, exactly. And then finally, the only game that Nintendo will be showing playable, that will be playable at E3, will be Zelda for the Wii U. So, you know, the inferior version of the game for the console that's hardly going to sell anymore is going to be the only playable game they have at E3. Kind of weird, weird situation, but they're going to have other games there, but the only thing that's going to be playable is Zelda. They did say they're going to do a full announcement of the NX later this year, which to me, I start to wonder if they're actually going to do a press conference type of thing rather than a Nintendo Direct, but who knows with Nintendo.
Yeah, anyways, I was surprised by that. If they're not announcing that at E3 and they're only saying they're going to have one game playable, like, what are they going to have at their conference?
Right.
Are they going to have any bombs to drop? It doesn't seem like it.
More hats for me tomorrow.
Oh, yep.
So the things that we know is coming this year, you have two Pokemon games, so that's going to happen this year, and then that's for the 3DS, and apparently they're still working on a few more 3DS games that'll be available the second half of the year. They haven't announced. So I do believe there'll be some new game announcements for the rest of this year, but nothing major. I'm actually considering Pikmin 4, because they said that's being worked on. Oh, that'll be announced this year. What's that?
I said, oh shit, they did say that.
They did say, Miyamoto said that. So that, I can guarantee you that'll come this year. Because there's no other, what are their Wii U games? You got Paper Mario and Pikmin. Maybe an Animal Crossing, because they have the Animal Crossing app that they're creating.
Yeah, let's talk about how that should probably print money.
If
it's even close to being like an Animal Crossing game.
Oh, God, yeah.
Like, if they have a build-your-own-house thing, and they're
shit.
For $2.99, you can get the entire like rustic set for your house.
Oh my god, that thing's gonna sell so much.
Yeah, they might as well just like not ship the NX and just fully support Animal Crossing on mobile forever, because that thing will be like a license to print money for a while if they can lock that down to being like at least close to a normal Animal Crossing game.
Right, right. That'll make even Happy Home Designer would be great on a mobile device, and yeah. I'm like a phone or tablet or something. Well,
and there's plenty of phones now. Like most Android phones have built-in NFC readers.
Yep.
So like, and who knows if Amiibos? You know, that's one way. If the NX isn't going to support Amiibos, to extend the life of those little plastic guys is
right.
to start allowing other devices that aren't Nintendo branded to start using them. So that could potentially be nuts.
That's crazy. But I think, Animal Crossing could be huge. They also announced Fire Emblem is coming this year, this fall. So they got Animal Crossing and Fire Emblem coming this fall to mobile devices. So that's kind of interesting. They just released a Fire Emblem game, which is fantastic, in Conquest or Fates or whatever that is. My voice is actually failing right now. But anyways, I think the numbers came up that... they're looking to sell only 800,000 more Wii U's the rest of this calendar year, which is that is a low number for a console. I don't know what they're gonna do. I mean, there's like nothing announced. What gives fans no reason to buy the device, right? Nope. If you were a Nintendo, if you're a gamer right now, would you buy the Wii U? Probably not. probably stay away from Nintendo products at this point, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, it was Zelda that would have been the only reason to be like, oh, okay, well, there's some couple cool games now, and I'll just wait until Zelda comes out. That was really the last, like, great hope, I guess, for Wii U owners. Unless you're super into, I don't even know what they call it now, Tokyo Mirage Sessions.
Which, by the way, I played that at PAX East. That was really cool. That was actually a really good game.
But the thing with that is, unless you're like a Shin Megami Tensei fan,
right,
or I guess more of a Persona fan from what everybody's saying, that, like, you know, that's just another JRPG that's leave it or take it, depending on if you're a JRPG.
Just like Xenoblade fan was last year, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
That the Wii U needs a price cut. Get that thing down to like $140, or sorry, $150, and then just you know, clear out the stock of them. You'll get people buying them at $150.
Yeah, well, and Nintendo knows it too. They've been selling like those refurbished units on their website with like a refurbished Wii U and a Nintendo Land copy for like $200.
Yeah, and you can totally do that. Yeah.
I don't know why that's just not what the retail price of a game is. And I understand they do the crazy bundles where it's like $300 for like the big Wii U and Splatoon and Mario Kart or Smash Brothers and stuff like that. And I understand that Nintendo games never drop in value. But if you want to start moving units, especially if we're gonna deal with the shelf space of an X, they got to start it now, I guess.
You know, I think the more I thought about it, the more I realized, and I think I actually brought this up in the last podcast when we were talking about the PSVR and X, all that, and PlayStation Neo. The big push this season is VR, right? And it's this the rest of this year for gaming. Everybody's going to be talking about VR. VR, VR, VR. This holiday season is PSVR. And so Nintendo, whatever their device is that gets pushed out this holiday season would have been second to VR no matter what, right? Because everyone's talking about virtual reality at this point. You're finally going to have Oculus and Vive and PSVR and store shelves. Everyone's going to want that. That's the hot new thing. So why compete with that? You know, yeah, you're waving the white flag on the rest of the year, but you're instantly going to be seen as a secondary technology by Nintendo. So by them holding it off, building up their game library, which they kind of mentioned that they want to have more games available in March, and there's a lot of developers now have dev kits. That's a good sign. That could potentially be a pretty good thing for Nintendo to get a good launch lineup and hopefully get a good price. But yeah, they're kind of waving the white flag on the rest of this year.
I don't know what to think about VR, like you mentioned. It almost feels to me like PlayStation VR is going to be make or break for all the VR stuff. Because
I kind of agree with you there, yeah.
The way things have come out now, like it doesn't sound like they've been so hot. I mean, yeah, on top of things like distribution issues, you know, it doesn't sound like a lot of people have gotten their Oculuses, their Oculi on time. I don't know, whatever.
Tom did, but he's selling his.
Oh, what? You know, but it seems like there's all this talk of everything feels like a tech demo rather than full experiences or games. And like, I had my first VR experience at PAX East. It was PlayStation VR. It was this thing called Headmaster.
And tell us about this amazing experience.
Oh God,
this,
yeah, play it.
Okay, so I had heard
killer app. Killer
so
app.
Much about VR. They've had VR at previous PAXes I've been to, but I didn't have a chance to go. I think my first PAX East, you went and played Eve Valkyrie, which, you know, I guess that has a lot of problems even if it's full release now. But at least that's, you know, a spaceship simulator thing. And then, so I'm waiting in line, and I think I'm in line for the PlayStation VR experience, which I guess had multiple games, but I didn't realize that. So I'm standing there thinking I'm in line for, what is it? Air Rigs, the
Mac Rigs. Yeah. Yeah.
Which I don't know if that's good or not. I've heard different things about it.
Sorry.
But then, so then they leave me around the corner and they're like, oh, okay, here you go. You're going to play Headmaster. I'm like, oh, cool, Headmaster, like Transformers when they had the head robots that went on to different robot bodies. That sounds cool, right? It'll be like that.
Sam, didn't you do that one too?
Yeah, yeah.
I got Job Simulator.
You like turn around and you're like, oh, this is about soccer balls.
Go ahead, Ryan. Let Ryan tell his story because his story is pretty good.
It's Headmaster and you're heading soccer balls. So I'm just standing there, and I'm nudging my head a little bit. You know, I go a little bit forward, and I try to hit it into a thing. And I'm like, wow, this is the future. I've never headbutted a soccer ball before. This sure is the next level of video games.
This is Kinect. This is the real Kinect 2.0.
Yeah, it was just like, what the hell? There's got to be more than this. But I don't know. So it feels to me like if PlayStation VR hits and it's just another wave like the Oculus and the Vive, where it's just more tech demo feeling type things and not like a real... I don't know what makes... I don't want it to get into an ontological argument of what makes a game a game, but it's just more of these boring one-trick things and not like a real experience. I don't know if VR is going to have this magnificent future that everybody thinks it is, at least in video games. You know, there's always the talk of like architectural stuff or whatever. I don't know.
And I think that was maybe what's smart about Nintendo getting out of the way of it, because they can kind of let that gimmick pass over the holidays when everybody kind of gets it and tries it and either likes it or doesn't. And then they can come in March and say, hey, here's the actual next generation of gaming right here with whatever gimmick Nintendo has.
But then if it does catch on big, you know, then they're caught holding the bag almost, because they have this new console and there's no way, you know, they can wait until November to see if VR is hot or not. And then if it's hot, go, okay, we're going to make our console more powerful to accommodate for VR so we can get in on this. You know, that's not a
turnaround thing. Exactly. Just
manufacturing wise.
Yep.
And maybe they could do something like PlayStation where they have the what do they call it? The breakout box thing, which is a little extra thing, but that seems pretty unlikely too. So I don't know what the fate holds, what fate holds for Nintendo or VR.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be a very interesting E3. It seems to get more interesting every single day.
Or really boring.
Yeah. Potentially. We don't know a lot of games coming this year. We've kind of played everything. This is like the E3 that I'm thinking, man, I would have wished to go last year and skip this year.
Oh, it was so good last year.
Yep. So we'll see. We'll get the Neo and maybe whatever the new Xbox One 2 is. But that's, yeah. Anyways, those are the Nintendo news. Kind of a weird Nintendo announcement. Very unpredictable announcement from the big end, but we'll see what happens in the next few months here, because it sure is going to be interesting leading up through to E3. But that's it. My voice is shot. It's gone. I'm struggling to stay awake and to stay coherent. So I want to thank you guys for joining me today. Thank you to our listeners for watching and listening and downloading and all that fun stuff. Please rate and review us on the iTunes.
Like and subscribe.
Yeah, like and subscribe. Like and subscribe below. Leave your comments.
Sound off in the comments below.
Sound off in the comments below. Like and subscribe. You can find us on iTunes, YouTube, Google Play. That's a thing now. Google Play Podcasts, Stitcher, and everything else. At SideQuesting on the Twitters, SideQuesting.com website. I'm Dolly. You can find me at Dolly Domofsky. Ryan, where can they find you?
At the Dark Wayne.
Sam?
SamDI79. Oh, and please, Internet, please go to Tom. He'll tell you his Twitter account's name in a minute. But please go to Tom's Twitter account and call him Dad. That's all I want.
That's all
I want from the Internet for wonderful. This next week.
Dad, what's your Twitter account? I'm no longer Dad. That was my shitty nickname. You're Dad now.
At Tom Johnson.
And we'll see you guys on the next side quest. Peace. Love, recycle.
Bye, friends.
Hustle,
street whiskey. Street whiskey.
Street fireball.